too much comedy.
What is up, everybody? Welcome to Comic Book Club!
Yeah!
I'm Alex.
I'm Justin.
I'm Pete!
And we are coming to you live from a couple of places on the internet. Crowdcast, YouTube, iTunes, Android, Spotify, Stitcher, the app of your choice. Those last couple aren't live, but they're still pretty cool. Anyway, that's
fine. Very cool. And the app of your choice is the best. Some people are watching this on DoorDash.
Some people are forced to watch it on some app, and they have no choices. It's very bad. I'll tell you what, though. If you are listening to this audio, you are going to miss a little bit on this particular podcast. We have a visual component that's coming up that we'll tease in a moment. But first, how are you guys doing? What's going
on? Well, great. You know what I would like to talk about? I have had a permagrin on my face, and I've had a horrible couple of days. But the only thing that has been keeping me going is yesterday we taped a show that I think is our best work of all time. We had a famous person on, and they reamed Zalbin in such a way that made me so happy. I have been smiling for days.
I mean, this is, talk about the ultimate tease. Is Pete happy Alex reamed famous person? This is truly the biggest thing we could have ever said.
Yeah, I mean, I guess as a little more of a tease, we can say you can check out this podcast on the Marvel Vision feed on Friday morning. Even though Loki
live,
is finished up,
so
we are continuing. We are continuing talking about Marvel stuff. So I guess you'll have to see what happened. And you know what? Maybe I had a permagrin because I like getting reamed.
Yeah?
Okay. Interesting twist.
Everybody wins.
I don't know. Maybe we all had a great time. It's all possible.
It's my last week in the woods. I truly was running through. There's a rainstorm like 20 minutes ago. I was running through the woods to get to this very spot to do this. I had to do a rowboat to get to the podcast that Pete's talking about. Shit's crazy out here. I saw a porcupine yesterday.
Wow. Bring it on. Bring the porcupine onto the podcast. What does it think about the current direction of Marvel Comics? I want to know.
No, it's porcupine from the Spider-Woman series from a year and a half ago. So you guys
good character.
Yeah, great character.
I'd love to get his perspective on things.
Great dad.
I want to apologize, though. I went to my liquor store, and I was trying to yell through the very thick glass, I need vermouth, and the guy did not have it. And I was asking about a dry gin, and he kept holding up different bottles of gin that they didn't look dry. So I'm not as well prepared as I would like to be for this.
Let me ask you real quick. It didn't look dry to you? Like how...
I don't know what that means, but
you want to look at it and get like a nice sandy gin, like one that's like you really see the granules of the gin. That's a dry gin. Listen, we're getting a little ahead of ourselves. You're getting ahead of your skis here, Pete, because we have two guests for you all on the show today, and I'm going to bring them, welcome them both into the stream right now. One of them is the writer of Gotham City Cocktails, official DC cocktail book, Andre Darlington, and the other one is the official CBC chef, woo-hoo-hoo! Brett Macris, also officially the chef de cuisine at Cushon in New Orleans. Guys, thank you so much for coming on. So excited to have you both here.
So fun.
Now, just to give a little bit of context, Brett, very good friend of the show, was our New Orleans correspondent originally for our Cloak and Dagger podcast, Cloak and Jabber, and has somehow stuck around through all of our nonsense, offering amazing food advice on our Patreon, among other things, among just being a generally cool guy. But he discovered your, hold on, do you call it a cookbook?
Mitch Gerads discovered your book.
Oh, okay.
Mitch Gerads, the artist, discovered your book and then posted it on Twitter and on Instagram and was like, this book is great. And so I love theme books like this, especially in our realm of comics and all that stuff. Like I have the Deadpool book. I have all kinds of stupid Marvel books, cookbooks. When I saw that one, I was like, I have the bat, the tattoo.
One's arguing with your love of Batman.
Yes. Yeah. And so what Brett has been doing, he's been putting up a vote every week of, hey, which recipe should we do on the show? And so we've been doing that for about the past 2 months, doing recipes from the book. Just a real quick question for something like this, Andre, is it a cookbook, a recipe book, a cocktail book? Is there like official terminology for what you call this?
I think
lifestyle,
it's sort of a fan compendium.
Ooh, that's good.
All right. Okay.
I mean, because I think more than anything, it became clear pretty quickly that, you know, this was a fan book. It's for Batman fans to experience scenes and characters and places in the DC universe. And that was what we were going for.
Yeah. So how did you get set up with this? How did you get... Did you pitch somebody? Did you get contracted? Were they like,
were you
hey,
just out drinking one night?
Yeah, were you in a bar? Yeah.
Like all
you should do this.
With like all good things, it starts with an email that could have ended up in my spam folder from DC Comics reaching out to ask me whether I wanted to write the Batman book. And then we had a phone conversation and I took about 15 seconds to think about it. I have an agent for my books, but, you know, I basically said yes. And I was like, let's figure it out. And then my agent was like, are you sure you want to say yes to Batman? And I was like, it's Batman.
Always yes. Say yes to Batman.
And don't say no to Batman.
You know, I'm a comics fan, but I mean, Batman is up there for me. So this was a really easy thing to say yes to. I think I was contacted because I was actually working on a comic book cocktail book with a guy that was an illustrator in the DC universe.
Oh,
and I had put a couple things up online, but it's kind of unclear how I ended up with the phone call completely. Although then we batted back and forth some ideas, and this was pretty interesting. You know, I basically wanted to say yes to it, but I batted back, you know, how much artistic control am I going to get? I'm a food and bev writer by training. I've been around for a long time. I wanted to know how much, you know, creative control I would get. And I said immediately that this cannot be a book that's inspired by, because you can go and Google Batgirl or Batman or Robin or anything and cocktail after it. And you get all these, you know, you kind of get birthday parties and people's ideas of some stuff that would be inspired by. I really wanted it to be as realistic as possible. I wanted it to be something that someone could pick up in Gotham City. That as close as possible to that.
Oh, that's cool.
Some legal issues with, I don't know if they're legal issues, but certainly there were many cooks in the kitchen on this. It's put out by Insight, which you guys probably know, put out amazing sort of fan books. They do incredible. They've done some incredible Batman books. So I knew these folks and knew that they would do a really good job with a cocktail book. But it was Insight, Simon & Schuster, and then DC Comics, and then above them even was somebody from Warner Brothers.
Oh, wow.
And so we had a lot of cooks in the kitchen, and I wanted to make sure that through, you know, as we made the sausage, as it were, things were going to come out still looking pretty good and having something interesting. And I really wanted to make sure that, you know, fans that have these attractions to certain characters or to the Batman universe in general, that they would get some new information or feel closer to the stories or feel closer to the characters. And that it could be as real as possible. Now, Warner Brothers sort of stepped in and said, no, we don't really want to actually have, you know, you can't say that this drink is consumed by this character. And that's fine,
right?
Because I got away with, I think, quite a bit in terms of tying these cocktails to characters. And I got really lucky that way in that I sort of sent them a really ballsy sort of preview of what I wanted to do. And they said, okay. Let's do it.
Oh, that's awesome.
It kind of surprised me. One of the things that is interesting about this book, and maybe I should have mentioned it in the intro more. I assumed it would have been maybe mentioned somewhere else, but I think they really wanted to leave it like this book that you could get there, was that none of the source material I was allowed to use were from any of the movies. Hmm. So when I signed on, I thought, oh, God, I'll just go watch some Christopher Nolan's and, you know, Bob this book out. and it turned out that I went back and reread hundreds of Batman comics. But of course, when you're writing a love letter sort of like this is to a city and to the people in it and the characters, that ended up being a really fantastic experience.
I was actually surprised at how deep a dive you actually do into this book with some of the, like, you did a cocktail based on Bane's home island.
It's deep continuity. When I drink deep into continuity.
Yeah.
I went pretty nuts. And I have to say, this is sort of a cocktail writer's dream in that I was allowed to rely on real world cocktail things that we all sort of know and accept of that probably happened in the 19th century or 20th century drinking and take it into this fictional universe. And it was really a dream come true. I mean, some of these drinks just wrote themselves. I think some, one of the first ones I wrote was the chartreuse cocktail for Poison Ivy. You know, so I did some just like pairing, you know, what does Poison Ivy drink? Of course, it's going to be chartreuse, which is this very herbaceous green liqueur created by Carthusian monks. But it just speaks to like vines and, and you know, botany. So there was a lot of that that were really simple. And then there was some direction from Warner Brothers and DC Comics, you know, what about this character? What about that character? But not much. And I always thought it, you know, it was pretty simple, actually, tying these characters to drinks. Once you, you know, I sort of loaded up Batman cartoons in my hard drive and and paired them out to these characters. And they let me get away with some really fun stuff, which is I wanted to have even a little more in depth into Wayne Manor and how Wayne Manor, you know, might have done entertaining. And I had a little entertaining guide from Wayne Manor, and they let me put in a little bit of that. I got in Martha and Bruce's father's, you know, their wedding cocktails. There's some fun, weird background.
That's awesome.
They let me do.
Little Mr. and
Sometimes
Mrs.
I went too far, so we had to edit some stuff out.
Yeah, with the pearl necklace themed drinks.
Exactly.
Not as
first you drop it, it breaks everywhere.
Come on, man.
Yeah, I mean,
spoilers.
Boston City is a very gritty place, and cocktail history can be really gritty as well. So they really paired. They paired nicely, and sometimes they did pair back the grit a little bit. I think I said something about there's a breakfast cocktail. You know, and I was like, well, in Park Row, it's covered in blood in the morning, so it's not that far hard.
Bloody Mary, kids.
So they made it a little more PG-13 than that. But otherwise, the book really stands as a work, and it was very interesting working with DC Comics and the editor, and the I think the photographer did an amazing job on the book as well. You know, it's making a book like this is a little bit like making a film in that I'm the writer and I hand in a script. And I don't know what it's going to ultimately look like. There's a lot of fingers in the pot. So when this came back, I was as happy as everyone else to see what a great job they'd done. Yeah.
I love the point of view that this the cocktail book it exists in Gotham City. Because you know in the real Gotham City, they're going to be have themed cocktails to whatever like crazy shit is going on in there on a nightly basis. Like beer in a shot specials whenever Batman's in the neighborhood.
Exactly.
Stuff like that. So like that's so cool. I appreciate that.
Was there any challenge to the fact that at least as far as I'm aware in the comics, Batman himself doesn't drink? Like sometimes you'll see Bruce Wayne with a drink in his hand, but he's always faking being drunk. So did you figure out any way around that, I guess?
Yeah, it's the elephant in the room in a way. He doesn't specifically not drink, I don't think, until the 40s. The comic started in 1939. And there's some interesting stuff in the beginning. There's definitely bottles of scotches hanging around on desks in the early days, which, you know, that's sort of like noir film. We see that too. Yeah. It starts out very noirish and in a noir-y era, which was really great for me. You know, Prohibition ended in 1933. America started drinking again really heavily. Basically 1934, you know, you start getting, you know, some of the famous drinking movies like The Thin Man and you know, some of the noir mysteries. And by 1939, we're still heavily in that era. So that was fun to play off of. Yes, Bruce Wayne in theory doesn't drink, although he does drink in the 80s. He's actually a recovering alcoholic in some of the books from the 80s. Didn't want to go into that territory either.
Yeah.
Some of the stuff that I did to get around that was there's a cocktail in there. I think it's called Suit Up, ultimately, which is sort of a espresso drink. And maybe Batman does take a slug of it before he hops in his car. Not that I'm advocating drinking and driving.
Batmobile drives itself.
He's a vigilante. Yeah.
You can have a cocktail in the next book that's just called the Bruce, and it's just 4 ounces of Schweppes. And
no proof cocktail books are really popular right now. I'm going to come out with the Batman 120 days of alcohol-free cocktails.
Now, this isn't specifically a Batman question at all, but I'm just curious how, when you're coming up with a recipe for this book, how do you develop a cocktail? Like, are you thinking about it? Are you looking at other cocktails that exist and tweaking them a little bit so they work for Gotham City? Or what's the approach?
A little bit of both. I thought that this was probably going to be a lot of customer's first cocktail book ever, you know, with the assumption that we're getting Batman fans. They might know some cocktails, but they might not own a cocktail book at all. I really wanted to make sure that one of the things the book would accomplish is if you go through the cocktails in this book, you've also sort of had at least 20, 24 of the great cocktails in the canon, so that when you run into those, you're like, ah, I made that in the Batman book. It's also true that a lot of variations are just variations on a theme anyway. A lot of cocktails from back in that era have very similar name, but one has maraschino cherry and one has orange liqueur. You know, so there's a lot of variation on the themes already. Making it up, again, I really relied on some of the characters just spoke to me. Bruce Wayne and his immediate cohort were whiskey to me. Poison Ivy definitely was chartreuse, but also absinthe because of absinthe's, you know, relationship to going crazy. Mm-hmm. And of course, then the Joker had to be absinthe. The Joker had to be mezcal, which also has a reputation for making you go crazy. So there was I sorted the characters a little bit in my mind in term of liquor base. That sort of started me off. And then some really thematic stuff for like the Park Row. I really wanted it to be kind of this roaring 20s back when Park Row, you know, where Bruce Wayne's parents were killed, but had been like a major theater district when he was a child, kind of going back to the 1920s and how glamorous those drinks are. So I kind of rooted around for a bunch of different I came at it from a bunch of different angles, I guess I'll say. Sometimes, you know, I'd get a name and dig around for what it was. There was quite a bit of cocktail testing on this book. This was
good for you.
In theory, over 50 originals. So, you know, we were making, I have, you know, a couple people I make cocktails with, especially one good friend of mine who's a bartender, bar manager, longtime career bar guy. And we were in my kitchen sort of like, so the Joker, what's he drinking?
So which cocktail in the book would you order on a rate? What's your drink from this book?
That's not fair. That's not a fair question.
Yeah,
at
it's
all.
Not a, it's,
come on.
It's not a fair question.
I do tend to make stirred drinks for myself after work more often than shaken ones. Just because I've got the stirrer there, I can put a couple cubes of ice in. So the one that we'll demo later is definitely up there. I think it's a variation of a drink that people will know. But I love going back to the book. And, you know, this time of year in summertime, I've been drinking those Bane cocktails. He's got a couple drinks related to the Bane world in there, which are simply essentially margaritas or daiquiris or mojitos. You know, he's from an island on the Caribbean. So that made it pretty easy to do variations on Caribbean drinks that we know.
I think that was the second drink we ever
The
first one we did was Tail Lights, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that seemed like a take on the Boulevardier. Am I wrong?
Yeah, correct. You're that's a fantastic one. I love it when I was able to sneak in these little tricks with either the garnish or I think the Tail Lights in that one is the two cherries trying to represent the Tail Lights, which I feel like is really representative of how cocktails were created originally. Again, going back to what you were saying about, you know, Gotham City is a rough and tumble town. Bartenders are out there every night saying, you know, what was in the news? Who's the new villain of the week? Let's make a drink for him. And I think that's still how bars operate. one of the things that was interesting in reading the comic books and really going back and digging in the early years is, you know, people have done a lot of work and development over the years of Gotham City itself. Where is it? What does it look like? I think there's a really nice book, actually, that gives you, you know, a few different map scenarios of what Gotham City would look like. I know Christopher Nolan made one behind the scenes for his movies so that he knew where things were and how far things were away. One of the things that comes up, and these guys were really funny. The guys that wrote the first Batman books, you know, the shining light was not on them. They put all kinds of hilarious stuff in there, including their parents' houses. So every once in a while, a character will just go to like Carroll Gardens in Brooklyn and be like, hey, mom and dad.
hard to square that. Exactly. But
again and again, it comes up that Gotham City is a city south of New York on the ocean. Well, what is that? Philadelphia. And it's also a mobbed up town. So I actually pulled in a little bit of Philadelphia history and a little bit of Jersey. You know, it's kind of Jersey area Italian drinks, which is why you see a little bit of a Negroni in there. an Americano. I had really fun, time with Falcone, who's a character I love. I feel like he's kind of this mafioso South Philly guy that I've seen order drinks before. He's kind of an Americano with a little balsamic. It's extra vinegar. It's actually still very delicious, but has a little vinegar in there with two olives just because, you know, the guy's intense.
Well, yeah, sorry, we did that one last week, right? That was
a week or 2 weeks ago.
Perfect.
Yeah.
Hope you enjoyed it.
That was great. We got a question here from Josh on Crowdcast. Andre, you sort of rightly deferred from answering this, but Brett, which is your favorite recipe from the book?
From the book? I really like the Roman from last week. I also like the Bane cocktail, I think my favorite is Tail Lights.
Mm. Oh, nice. Those are fantastic ones. You're choosing great ones. I mean, I really just had such a good time with this. I really wanted people to enjoy the cocktails and make them approachable, which is a word I hate, right? But, you know, you do want to make it not too hard and not have too many crazy ingredients for people. I did rely on, you know, a few things like limoncello, which are a little unusual, but again, kind of goes to this kind of ready-made, you know, a lot of the drinks in Gotham City, we assume that unless they're tied to fundraisers, these are not necessarily fancy drinks. These are thug drinks, right? These are criminal,
drinks. Also, you know, like, the good thing about it is there's a pretty good balance in the book of, like, pretty easy. Like, you could make this with, if you like cocktails, you're going to have some of this stuff at home. And then there's some little more advanced stuff that you can get into. Like, I had a small tutorial on how to smoke a cocktail.
Yeah.
In the paper, in the Slack, we did the smoke pellet 2 weeks ago. That was amazing. That was really awesome. That was fun. So I appreciated that you did have some more advanced stuff there, a little shaking egg whites and that sort of thing with some of the cocktails. It was great.
But yeah, it does seem, to Brett's point, certainly as we've been doing this over the course of 2 months, I've had to expand my liquor cabinet just a little bit. But at the same time. But at the same time, it's fun, and it's fun to have the stuff around. Like, we made the one with Adger Rays, which was the one had Adger Rays, and made a bunch of margaritas with that also. So good. Yeah. So it's nice to have that around. Right? I never would have thought of having that, so it's great.
A lot of these liquors, you know, once you have them in-house, you end up, you know, sometimes they sit on the shelf for a couple months, but you always end up going back and, you know, putting it on the, you know, many of them are just good on the rocks. You know, but Ancho Reyes, you know, a little top off of Ancho Reyes in so many cocktails is great. You can put it on an old fashioned, you can put it in a Manhattan, you know, especially these days when, you know, we all like a little spice, and instead of, you know, muddling jalapeno, you can just reach for a bottle and throw a little bit of that in there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, to that end, why don't we get into our demo portion tonight? As we teased, we're going to do something the appropriately named the Gotham City cocktail, or just the Gotham City. Now, no cocktail after it. I don't know, but
yeah, cocktails implied.
Cocktails implied. Okay, there we go. So, Andre, I'm going to turn it over to you to lead. Brett, I know you have everything set up there too. As I mentioned, I have everything very awkwardly set up here. And Justin, you have.
I am. At
have
my
some
mom's
woodland
house.
Creatures bringing you things, right?
Yes, I'm at my mom's house in Way of St. New York. I have a porcupine who's going to be handling the stirring. I raided her liquor cabinet and pulled some approximations. So I'm going to be drinking the country version. Yeah.
But yeah, Andre, take it away.
Yeah, let's kick it off. So Gotham City is, again, an example where I'm trying to sort of state one of the interesting things I wanted to do in the book was make Gotham City a city we kind of know, a universe we know a little bit. I basically created an entire cocktail backstory for the city, basically saying Gotham City was so dirty that Prohibition never really came there. Bars in the Narrows never really closed.
Nice, yes.
So that's why you end up with some of these drinks that have a little more oomph than they otherwise might. Gotham City is essentially a variation on a Manhattan. Manhattan is itself actually a group of drinks. It just happens to be the most famous of them, named after the boroughs of New York. The Bronx is another one that's kind of famous, but actually all of the boroughs have a cocktail. The Gotham City, often Manhattans base themselves on cherry. You'll see maraschino cherry in there. And Manhattans are typically these days based on rye whiskey. One of the interesting things is that for a long time, we didn't have a lot of good rye in the U.S. It's really come back in the last 10, 15 years. So rye would have been, rye was basically the liquor of the East Coast, and bourbon was the liquor of the Midwest to a large extent. We had a lot of rye growing east of the Appalachians, and it was kind of America's first whiskey had a lot of rye in it until we got into the Ohio Valley and started growing corn to the extent that we did. Maybe too much backstory for people, but Manhattan's an interesting
drink. I love it.
For that, an interesting drink for that reason. And I based this on, I said, all right, we're thugs. We're Gotham City. We're a little bit more hardcore. One of the things I know from many communities that are either in Brooklyn, Bronx, or Philadelphia, which is sort of another borough, is that people are making their own hooch. And often they're making limoncello, which is something that I think probably this whole Eastern Seaboard probably has somebody's limoncello in the basement or the refrigerator. So I thought, let's use that as our sugar so we don't have to add simple syrup to cocktails. And I do it a couple times in the book. So basically, you can take whatever limoncello you like, or if you're one of those people that make your own or have some from a friend back in the freezer. I believe we're doing a quarter ounce of limoncello. And just to show the items, I'm going to do a jigger. I'm going to eventually put it in this cocktail glass or coupe glass, very they nice. Call it. I have a bar spoon. These have come way down in price these days. So you can get one probably 10, 20 bucks. Back in the day, it was a lot more expensive. You can, if you're at home, you can use a chopstick. It really doesn't matter.
I'm going to use my finger.
Chopstick.
And then I have a stirring glass. Mine just happens to be metal because I can take it on the road or go camping, and I like it. But, yep, a mug, a those beautiful glass stirring vessels that people see these days. Again, those have come way down on price. So out on, you know, out on the internet, they're 15, 25 bucks and getting one of those. So we can go the smallest ingredients first. I'm going to do like a quarter ounce of limoncello.
And sorry, do you want to put the ice in the mixer first, or do you want to put the ice in second?
Yes. Let's ice put the first. Ice in the mixer first. So that we're not splashing all over our desks.
Yes. Our laptops.
I actually wanted the same thing.
Nice.
Home refrigerator, home freezer ice is good. People make a lot of noise about ice in the cocktail world. If your freezer is making ice at home, it's making quote unquote slow ice. We had a war with restaurants that were using those big, you know, blown out cubes. The idea in the 70s, 80s, and 90s was to make ice as quickly as possible that took up the most amount of surface area so that you got a larger looking drink. But your ice at home is fine unless it's been, you know, unless you have a bag of stale shrimp sitting on top of it, in which case you want to make new ice. Ice is a huge part of cocktails.
Or you need to make a new cocktail.
Yeah, maybe. Exactly. It could be delicious with the right, you know, with a little meat cock whiskey and some basil. You just want to make sure it's fresh. I use one of those silicone trays. A lot of people do.
I love those.
It makes fantastic ice. So we're going to add a little limoncello. I think we're just doing a quarter ounce of that. Mm-hmm. And then we are adding some sweet vermouth. I'm going to use some Dolan.
Oh, that's what vermouth is.
All right.
I've been using Berto, which Berto's I really like as well.
What is vermouth? What is vermouth? I went to a liquor store and they were like,
yes, what is vermouth? So vermouth, just in case people don't need a little refresher on it, is basically aromatized wine. And I do like to remind people that it's aromatized wine because a lot of people pop open their vermouth, make a couple of Manhattans or whatever, and then they leave it on top of their refrigerator or microwave for months and don't see it again. That's the same as leaving a bottle of wine on top of your refrigerator opened and hot. So your vermouth basically starts dying the moment you open it. It will last refrigerated for probably 3 weeks. So that's why I like to buy a smaller bottle of vermouth because you have less surface area for the air. It aromatizes a little slower. Now, do you need to go throughout the vermouth you have in your kitchen? Maybe, but probably not really. A lot of the cheaper brands know that you've left it on top of your oven and they're sort of created or left it on top of your refrigerator. They've sort of created that flavor and that, you know, Some of the common vermouths you have taste a lot like oregano and black olives, which is can be good in a Manhattan. Depends, you know, with pizza or spaghetti or something. That's fantastic. Dolan's a little lighter. It's a very high quality vermouth that everybody can get across the United States, which is why I use it quite often. We're going to do a half an ounce of that.
So
I
there is
make it double because the show is an hour.
Yeah,
make yes, responsible. Yeah. That's what I already that's a good did.
Idea. Yeah, yes. You know, it's kind of like in an airline when they say that you have to put the mask on yourself before someone else. Like, make sure you make yourself a drink before you hit someone else.
100%. I love the idea that this is what happens every week. We're not a comic book show anymore. We just make cocktails.
And then I mean, you have a shit. Of rye whiskey. Yes. Bourbon works here. All right, we're on the same page. You got a little sad.
Look at you guys.
Well, you're a Nola guy. Maybe that was subconscious that I
grabbed. I mean, you know that Sazerac has their own restaurant here in New Orleans.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Though I really like Templeton if I'm drinking rye, but I don't have any rye, so I have Woodford Reserve that I'm
Woodford Reserve. All right,
that will be tasty.
I love
Old Forester.
It is higher. Old Forester is fantastic. I do think with ryes, there's a lot of great ryes inexpensively on the market. Rittenhouse is a great one.
Love
Sazerac. You know, of course, Wild Turkey makes a rye. Everybody makes a rye these days, and they're all really fantastic. You know, if you become a rye connoisseur, you can kind of taste the difference. Rye gives it a little bit of heat and a little bit of like sharp edge to it. So I do feel like rye is a little bit of like a cocktailer's spirit. It's definitely not training wheel whiskey, which is probably bourbon, which is a little bit sweeter. So if you have a guest or you yourself don't like kind of that sharpness of rye, there's nothing wrong with making a bourbon Manhattan. Or in this case, a Gotham City. So we're going to take that and we're just going to stir it.
And are we, in the recipe, there are bitters. Are we adding bitters or?
Yes, let's add bitters. I couldn't remember if I did it as a garnish at the end or in it, which is sort of half one a dozen of the other.
Yeah.
Let's go ahead and add a few bitters. I have Angostura. You can use anything. You could use Thomas
Fee Brothers
Thomas.
Okay.
Yes. Yep.
Okay. No, it's not okay, Alex. You've messed this up.
Give up. I'm logging off.
Throw it in the garbage.
Throw it out. So there's a difference between a lot of times Manhattans are made with bitters in it. Sometimes on top, the only difference is when you first lean into that glass, are you getting the aromas from the bitters or not? Do you want that? I feel like a lot of times these days, bitters have sort of been confined to, as a garnish, been confined to cocktails that have egg white in it, so that when you get a frothy drink, they do that little trick where they put like 3 or 4 dabs of bitters on top and they run a toothpick through it. So it's not only beautiful, but you don't smell egg white first, you smell bitters instead.
Yeah.
That's where you're going to see bitters most often used as a garnish.
Instead of bitters, I have this tiny pine cone I just got.
that works. Bitter.
That might work. It's pretty bitter.
A nice resin. Residue.
Yeah.
Justin, why?
So we're going to give that.
I'm a nature boy.
We're going to give that a good stir, and go ahead and pour it out.
Actually, this next part is my favorite part of the recipe. Is when you. Take the lemon.
You take a lemon, take a Y peeler. You can take any peeler you have at home. If you don't have any kind of peeler at home, you can make a coin. So that's it. That is just cutting a little bit of the skin off. But in this case, I'm going to take a little bit of lemon. And the oils on the lemon rind are on the outside. So with the outside facing out over your glass, give that sucker a little squeeze.
Mm-hmm.
Like so. And when bartenders do that, what you're seeing is them expressing the oil over the top of the drink.
My favorite part is the discard.
Yeah, and then you discard. So I'm kind of into the discard in this book because a lot of the recipes at that time do discard. A lot of times people drop it in the drink. For a while, there's a little back and forth on whether
you still, it's so like rich. It's so there, though. It's lovely.
Yeah, that's very good.
Delicious.
Wow. I will tell you the we've been over the past couple of months or so doing these drinks, I never used to do the garnish before. I never used to do the lemon peel or the grapefruit peel or anything like that.
No, you used to do sour candy, right?
Yeah, I used to use like sour candy or Reese's peanut butter cups, you know, that sort of thing. No, but it really does actually make a big difference. Like, this has completely turned me around, this experiment that we've been doing, because
I know it's kind of funny because you sit at a bar and you watch a bartender doing that and you're like, oh, it's some hocus pocus, it looks cool, I kind of understand it. But then when you go home and you make a martini for yourself and you try it and you think, why is this just not popping the way
this
it does?
This tastes bad.
Yeah, and then why? You just a little bit of expressed lemon oil on top, and it really opens up the whole drink. Yeah. It really opens up the alcohol. So, yeah, it turns out that, you know, I always like to tell people to think of their garnish first, because so often, you know, certainly when I started making cocktails, you make the whole drink, you run around, you try it, and then you think, shoot, do I even have a lemon? I don't even know if I have a lemon. You know, so it's like always have that. And, you know, it's just something that chefs do, too. Basically, for cocktails, you can have a mise en place, right? You set everything up and get everything out and going. Chefs know. Luckily, in the cocktail world, we don't have to have.
I have a discard bucket over here, too.
Yeah.
Wow, so this guy's a pro.
I find that it sounds like it's a hassle to set up in advance and even, you know, have simple syrup in a squeeze bottle and that kind of stuff. But actually, it takes all the headache out of your cocktail hour. You know, so let's say on Sunday night, you know, if you're really thinking ahead, Sunday night you could set up kind of the stuff that you want to drink during the week. And at 5 o'clock, instead of having to hunt around for lemons and make simple syrup and all this stuff, you can just make yourself a drink in 3 minutes flat less. Which is pretty nice.
Now, something that people might have seen as we were flipping through some of the pages here on the broadcast, but people on the audio podcast might know, is beyond drinks, you also have food in the cookbook, I guess cookbook. And Brett, you made a couple of the items, right?
Do
you
want to show them off? But let me just say, in all honesty, until like last week, I forgot that you had food in the book. We've been focused on the cocktails. And so in most books in this style, cocktail books, they always put food in the back, and it's like it never coincides with whatever, like, here's this Manhattan, and we pair it with a ribeye. But like, no one's doing that. So actually the food that you have in here is just great for what it is. It's like if you were hanging out with two friends and chatting, you'd want these little finger foods, little things like that. So I actually did do the Gotham City wings.
Yes.
Yes. Wow. Look at that.
So to describe this for people who are listening on the podcast, this is chicken wings that have been dyed with squid ink, I believe, and are in the shape.
No, it's not squid ink.
No? You're joking about that.
Yes.
Oh, so it's pen ink. It's pen ink.
Food color.
That's fantastic.
Made to look like a basketball. Yes. And it's really great. It's pretty good barbecue sauce.
Brett, some people are saying, can you get closer to the camera just because?
Yeah, let's see those suckers.
I did my best to make it look like the bat symbol, but yes.
future special at the restaurant.
Brett. Yes.
Yeah. So what is that? That's barbecued chicken wings, essentially, is what it is.
Yes,
yeah, it's a straightforward chicken barbecue recipe,
Yep, and then I made these little actually, you know what? I went to the store to get Old Bay, but this is the South.
Oh, I love Old Bay.
It doesn't exist. It doesn't exist at all. I had to make it.
I should ship you some when I go to Baltimore. I get tons of Old Bay.
Yeah, I mean, I can get it through, like, purveyors, and they're all like, yeah, hold on, it'll be, like, 2 weeks. No. Really, I couldn't get it at the store. But the other thing I made was your little espresso nocturnes for the cremes, which are really nice, just in the shot glass. They put a little orange zest on top, like the recipe. Just out of curiosity, I mean, you do a little shout out to your wife for the brownies in the back. Where did you get the food from?
Yeah, the food, I feel like I haven't. So I'm an old restaurant reviewer, and I actually owned a restaurant out in Chicagoland. So food is one of my first loves, and I've been at these cocktails for so long that I've just developed a few things up my sleeve. So when this book came out, I thought, oh, I'm going to use that. You know, because the Nocturnes came about, I think, because I needed to go it's like they're lighter, right? There's not any, you know, normally when you're making a mousse, you end up with like lots of egg and all this stuff. Yeah. And I wanted something lighter that's gelatin.
Both of these were very easy. It's just throw the stuff in the pot, bring it to a boil, turn it off, add the chocolate. It's done. Really easy.
It's sort of I like to call it like a drinker's mousse, right? Because I feel like as cocktailers, we might not, you know, after the second drink, we're kind of lazy and we're not going to make a full mousse.
I also appreciated the little direction.
I do this podcast every week after two drinks.
Where you were like, yes, break it at the joint so you can expand it and make it like a bat wing. I appreciated that.
The bat wings, I was wondering whether I should do it. I thought that jet wings might be too boilerplate, you know, but I thought, God, I've got to do these jet black wings. They're just too funny.
They're very cool.
Too fun for cocktails.
I also took like the joints, all the joints, even on those, and French them a little bit. I mean, obviously, nice. No one has to do that. So you can basically lollipop the whole thing. Yeah.
I love it.
Look at this industry terms coming out. Frenchdom.
Is chicken wing 201. I'm doing 101.
Another thing, if we're talking restaurant shop here, you always befriend the bartender. You always befriend the beverage director. Always.
Always.
As a rule.
And the chef, hopefully, too. But definitely the bartender. Who typically
start with the bartender, get to the chef. You get the bartender, you get the chef. You're a regular for life.
Andre, this has been absolutely amazing, but before we let you go, so Gotham City Cocktails is on shelves now. Is there anything else coming down the road that you want to plug?
Yeah, crazily enough, I've had a wild pandemic. I wrote a book called Booze and Vinyl it came out in 2018, and I just finished a second volume of that, which comes out in spring. And then I also I have a book called Booze Cruise. So right before the pandemic, I did a full circumnavigation of the globe and pulled a book together. It was like more than 40 cities around the world, kind of what they eat, what the essential cocktails are. Wow. So I've got that going on. And then I'm currently working on a global cocktail food book, which comes out in fall 22. So all of that is, all of that stuff going on. It's all at andredarlington.com. I have a newsletter. Keep up. You know, my next newsletter will include this and links to that. So that's what's happening. It's a great way to stay. I'm just trying to stay more in conversation with people. I feel like during the pandemic, cocktails became this way that people came together over Zoom and formats like this to have a little community after it was taken away from us, sadly. So it's just a way to the newsletter and the website and stuff is a way to keep the conversation rolling with people.
And Andre, where are you based?
I'm actually in Philadelphia.
All right.
I put a lot of Philly reference. That's where Pete is based as well.
That's right. West Philly.
Give us the shout out on a bar to check out in Philadelphia.
Philadelphia is in Fishtown called R&D, which I think stands for research and development, possibly, hopefully. R&D, if that's not what it is. If it's Renee and Desiree, but I think
two great names.
Yeah, both work.
Exactly. R&D has collected a lot of the great bartenders in Philadelphia after the pandemic here. They're now open, I think, at least 6 days a week. Great convivial bar. I'm going to do an event there next month.
Roll through.
Yeah, absolutely. I'll see you there.
Cool.
Awesome. Andre, thank you so much for coming on. Brett, thank you for coming on as well, and thanks both of you.
Actually, if I didn't do this, she would be really mad at me. It's my 14th wedding anniversary.
Are you here?
Nocturnes too.
Yeah, I'm using my groomsman, whatever this is, glass.
Oh, I love it.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, cheers to your anniversary.
Thanks for having me on. I'm really excited to meet you all and Brett, who we were chatting briefly on Instagram. I love that you guys are cooking through the book. Thank you so much for having me on. The book is really a love letter to Batman and all things Batman world. And it's been really exciting to see fans really take to this book. The book is doing great. And Instagram is full of hilarious pictures of people dressing up as the Joker and drinking, you know, which It doesn't get any better than that.
Yeah, that's amazing.
Yeah, guys. As Nat says in the comments, we have been drinking so much due to this book. It's a labor of love.
And Nat also said, tell the waiter, quote, bring the chef out here. I doubt he's busy. Pete,
not uh-oh. True.
Uh-oh, here we go.
The next time you guys do a live show, I'm going to be there. And
I'm going to punch him in the face for you, so don't worry about it.
We're both going to knuckle punch him.
Yeah.
Wow. All right. This is neither here nor there. Guys, thank you so much for coming on. We're going to move on with the show. Andre, Brett, have a good night.
Take care.
Later. All right.
There we go.
Happy wedding anniversary.
Anniversary to Brett. So also, nice. If you are New Orleans way, definitely go to Koshan, his restaurant. Justin, you
went there. I can't wait. I want to go.
I went there, yes. I was down in New Orleans doing shooting a commercial, doing
line
night
producer.
Shoots.
You were a line
nope,
producer.
I was not doing that. We were shooting a commercial down there, and we were shooting nights, so I shot all night, went and slept for 4 hours, and then went to Koshan and had an amazing lunch, and then so good, like very rich food. Went back, slept more, and then got up and shot our night of this commercial.
Nice.
I was feeling amazing. I actually went there. I hung out with Brett, obviously, and Sleepy Pigeon from the Patreon Slack. Nice. It was amazing.
Awesome.
So
and don't forget to also check out Gotham City Cocktails from Andre Darlington, which is out now, as we have been talking about incessantly for the past 2 months. It is great. And folks, we're going to move on with our next section, which is you wanted to say something else, Justin.
Real quick, this is maybe unnecessary to say, but I will be back in New Orleans in November, Brett. We are coming to your restaurant.
Yeah.
Whoa, Novems.
Ooh, all right. Yeah. Here we go. All right. We're going to move on with your audience questions. And for audience questions, this is pretty straightforward. You guys know how to do this. You can drop a question over in YouTube, or if you're over on Crowdcast, you can do it over and ask a question. But I'll tell you what, guys, before we get to the audience questions, I loved learning about all these fancy cocktails, but I'll tell you what I don't like. Do you know what I don't like? Cocktails. You know, when you're like, your pubes get too long, and it starts to look like you have like a furry tail going on down there. I don't like that.
Yes, I hear you, Alex. This is good. That was a good transition into this. There's no doubt about that. Because you know, here's the thing. I know what you mean. It makes total sense to me, as I was saying. That's why I use the Performance Package 4.0 from Manscaped. Inside, you'll find the Lawnmower 4.0 trimmer, Weed Whacker ear and nose hair trimmer, Crop Preserver ball deodorant. So happy to be saying this here in the woods. Crop Reviver toner, plus 2 free gifts, boxer briefs, and a Shed travel bag.
Cool!
Look, should you be drinking or trimming? Maybe not. But if you do, the brand new Lawnmower 4.0 features a cutting-edge ceramic blade to reduce grooming accidents thanks to their advanced skin-safe technology, plus a 7,000 RPM motor, a new multifunction on-off switch that can engage you via travel lock, and it gives you the ability to turn on a 4,000K LED spotlight on and off when you need a more precise shave.
That's
one time I cut my whole dick off.
Okay. That's Manscaped specifically asked us to say that. The good news, the lawnmower is also waterproof in case you drop it in your drink. This package also comes with a weed whacker, which uses a 9,000 RPM motor-powered 360-degree rotor dual-blade system. That's technology. This nose and ear hair trimmer provides proprietary skin-safe technology, which helps prevent nicks, snags, and tugs in those delicate holes. Okay.
No dick at all. You know that line in Ghostbuster where they say this man has no dick? That was based on my life. True story.
Yes, a lot of Ghostbusters is based on your life.
you had that big fight with that librarian, right?
You know yes. It.
Yeah. Plus, you're going to get the Crop Preserver ball deodorant and Crop Reviver ball toner and Manscaped boxers and the Shed travel bag. You'll be saying goodbye to cocktails and hello to cocktails with no space between the two words, just to be clear, in no time.
Ray, if someone asks if you're a god, you say yes!
There you go. Get 20% off plus free shipping with the code FANSIDED20 at manscaped.com. That's 20% off plus free shipping with the code FANSIDED20 at manscaped.com. Achieve pubic glory this year. Not a term I use a lot with Manscaped. With Manscaped.
Great. All right, let's move into our audience questions. And just a hot tip, if you want Pete to actually read your lines, give him lines you definitely don't want him to read, and then tell him he's definitely not going to read them. There you go. Mr. Yeah, reverse psychology himself. Psychology.
Word for word, baby!
Jesus.
It's a game of chicken we're all losing at.
Let's go to our questions here. We got one from Edward Doherty over on Crowdcast. Which characters have the least well-defined or most visually confusing powers in comics? For the life of me, I can't figure out what the darkness does besides having little goblins pose around him.
That's such a good question.
That's such a good question, because I do think there are these characters on the edges of comics where it's like, this is a cool idea. It just doesn't work in comics because of whatever. Like, for as much as we love, what's his name? The Piper. Spot from Spider-Man. Who goes in and out through different holes. I feel like it just doesn't quite work the way it's been done. It always gets too, it heightens too quickly, and all of a sudden there's just too much, it's chaotic in a normal panel grid.
Nat actually brings up in the comments here, Spawn. I do think that's another good one. I don't know what Spawn does. Pete got so angry he just laughed about Spawn. Oh, he's back.
Don't talk shit about Spawn. I'll leave.
He's got chains. He goes to hell sometimes. What are his powers? A cape?
Well, I believe his powers are the ticking clock running down was mostly. And also, chains are not powers. Chains are a burden that he bears, I believe, technically.
Okay.
Yeah, but he can control the chains, and he can do things with the chains. And, he's also, can't be killed. So there's that stuff.
I have another answer here that's something that has sort of bothered me for many years. Galactus. Like, everything about Galactus is awesome. He shows up. It's scary. It's intimidating. But the actual eating of a planet never looks right. It's weird.
He shouldn't eat in front of people. It's always
with his feet.
Yeah.
He eats with his feet. He has tiny little mouths in his feet. They go, om, yum, 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 on the planet as he's sinking into it.
That's what Stan Lee said originally.
Yeah.
I don't know. He eats with his feet.
Come on. We got to get this one out. Most of the... I mean, this is the problem with comics, and I feel like I run into this sometimes when people ask me specifically about the movies or TV shows, and like, hey, what's this character's deal? I'm like, don't worry about it. Because they have cosmic energy, or they're an omega level mutant, or something like that. There's a certain point, particularly when a character gets so overpowered, that it doesn't matter what they do, and it's more about who they are and how they approach problems, because most of their powers are shooting rays out of their eyes, shooting rays out of their hands, exploding somehow, but coming back together, and that's pretty much it.
Well, let me throw out topically, Kang. A lot of people talking Kang, and I'm like, I don't know. It's hard to, let's not get into it.
I've been avoiding that so hardcore, because every time I think about it, I'm like, well, Kang, he conquers. He does that. Whenever anybody's asked me, they're like, what's his deal? I'm like, oh, mostly he stands there with his hands behind his back and floats on a platform and says, now, Avengers, it is time. And that's pretty much it. But
you've crossed me for the last time, this time for sure.
Time.
I do time. Quick shout out to Josh. He puts the planet in his mouth and eats it. I wish Galactus was just eating planets like apples, because that would make way more sense.
Oh, it would make so much more sense. Or if he, like,
but what would he be standing on? What would he be standing on if he's holding Earth?
Space. Like,
I don't know. Another larger Earth.
Hard to draw. What's that planet coming? What's the story with that planet, Alex?
Why's he got a stand?
It's called Large Earth. He's sitting on that. He's picking a bunch of planets out of a planet tree, and he's eating them like apples.
Everybody knows there's a giant
very
bench
strong.
Next
That's all
to
I'm
Earth.
And me and mine was stronger because I substituted some stuff. Limoncello is like poison to me. That stuff's bad.
I've never had it before.
Blech. Ugh. It's like drinking
it
like,
separately and taste it.
It's like putting a soap, big piece of soap in your mouth.
Wait, Pete, what are you drinking? Since you couldn't find Vermouth.
Oh, so
I love how chill you were through that whole thing. You didn't say a word. You just sipped whatever you were drinking the entire time.
If you said anything, we were going to call you out, right?
Yeah. 100%.
See, what I do, it's very complicated, but I can go over for you, is I take booze and then I put it in a glass and then I drink it. Or in this case, I add a little half and half here of the Arnie Palmer special that was on sale at the gas station near my house. And then stir it up with a, you know, a stick of some kind.
A stick of some kind. Yeah. A stick of some kind. Let me say, Pete, you may be the most Gotham City bartender of us all, because you are drinking hard and don't care what it tastes like.
That's right.
We got a kind of question, sort of comment over here on YouTube. This is from The Big. Just finished Sweet Tooth. So will Johnny the Last Man Henchman with the Heart of Gold turn out to be the true hero of the show? Second guest, the horse.
Ah, well, yeah. We're all getting horsed tonight specifically. Let's not forget that.
Yeah, shout out to Candyman, a Sweet Tooth podcast. Check it out for that fun running bit. You'll get it then.
Yeah, you'll get it then. I will say that henchman does strike me as a character that is spotlighted in the end of the series, the first season. So maybe, and also maybe one of the most taken from the comic book moments of the show from my observation.
One other thing, this is very side and not addressing this question at all, but something that came out today that I thought was interesting is Netflix released a bunch of viewing figures. They're self-reported figures, so they're already a little iffy. Also, Netflix bases their figures on 2 minutes of a household watching a TV show, so barely counts as a view. But Sweet Tooth, they announced for the first time, had 60 million households watch it in the first 28 days. That's compared to Shadow and Bone, for example, that was also in a very similar period in the first 28 days, did 55 million, and that was picked up. So I feel like I've certainly been wondering, why hasn't Sweet Tooth been picked up for a season two? And if you go back and listen to our podcast, we were lucky enough to talk to Jim Mickle, the showrunner, and Amanda Burrell, the executive producer. We have separate podcasts for them. They are gung-ho on doing a second season. They were ready to go back in June when we talked to them.
Yeah.
It's been well more than a month at this point. So hopefully there's going to be an announcement soon.
Yeah. Let me throw this out. They could be already working on it before they announce it. Like I think they'll definitely do it. I mean, it's RDJ's production company, and we've got a lot of RDJ hype coming on our podcast in the near future. So get ready for that. But yes, I think it is. It's coming.
Yeah, absolutely. I think we'll get an announcement soon. To your point, I mean, very similarly, Lock and Key, I believe they had pretty much the second season already broken, if not written, well before they even launched season one. Like, they were already working on it just in case. So that seems to be the pattern with Netflix.
I think, and that's the future, I think, where it's like you shorten the timeline of when you're making your announcements and your release date, because it just makes people, it's more in the consciousness, it's better for the show.
This is from Nat Townsend. What is the most delectable meal you have ever seen depicted in a comic book? Just to throw it out there, any of the watery soups that Alfred feeds Bruce?
Oh, yes, nice. Definitely. Those sad ass soups that Alfred honestly whips together at the last minute.
He's like, oh shit, hey, Batman's up. I'm going to pour some tea in a bowl.
Man, he died, all right?
I had some leftover Earl Grey in my cup. I'm going to pour it in this bowl and serve it to Bruce.
He wasn't getting enough nutrition from the thin soups. He needed a stew. Alfred needed a stew.
How dare you?
How about the dinner that the Joker served, where it was faces, the face dinner,
faces
from death? That was that Death of the Family, the Scott Snyder crossover.
Death of the Family.
How about
the name of it? I feel like I've mentioned.
It's a bunch of manga stuff that is amazing.
Yeah, I was going to mention. I think it's this book called Oshinko, or something like that. This is not delectable, but I do think about this all the time. They talk about a dish which is, and I believe this is a real dish, where a seal eats a bunch of seagulls, and then the seal dies, and they take it and they bury it in the ground for like 2 months until it becomes fermented. Oh, Shinbo, there you go. And then they dig it up, and apparently it's fragrant and kind of terrible, but also hits this pleasure center in your brain at the same time. So disgusting. What? And they go into it very much in depth in the book, but it's definitely something that like I think about very frequently.
And there's an Icelandic dish that's like burying a shark for, and then you eat it a couple of weeks later or something, and it's awful. It's like poison. Like, what are we doing?
Pete, you got an answer? Did Punisher eat one of his guns one time or something like that?
No, I'm trying to think. I wish there was more Rochester-based comic books where you could get really, get some sweet shots of the garbage plate. But
Pete, let me ask you, how often when you finished a perfect garbage plate, on the styrofoam plate that you eat it off of, like an animal, mm-hmm. when you finished it, were you ever like, delectable?
Well, when I was a kid... To prove, your manhood, you would lift up the plate, because by the time you finished, the plate was now clear. Like, that's how gross the food is. It would take a paper plate or a styrofoam plate and would turn it clear.
And let's remember, this is food that's going into your body, that you put in your body.
That's right.
Does your body also go clear?
No. Yes.
That would be skin. Cool. That would be fun.
You can see... For years, you can see right through Pete. You can see right through Pete.
All right. This is from Kevin. Are there comics you got drunk to read or that you were drunk when you read the first time? And did you go back and reread them sober?
Hmm. No, I don't. I rarely at the end of a night, I'm like, let me just tuck in with some comic books after I've been out drinking or at home.
I have a hard time reading when I'm drunk.
Yeah, I mean, sometimes when we're reading stuff for the stack or prepping for the show, I'll have a drink while I'm reading because it's nice, but I don't think, to your point, I want to concentrate on the stuff, so I'm not, like, time to get wasted or anything.
Yeah.
I feel like I mentioned this, maybe I just mentioned this on Twitter and not the show, when there was all that stuff going around about the new 52 a couple of weeks ago, very weirdly, but... Before the new 52 launch, they, being DC, had an event for press near Midtown Comics, which was like the official launch party signing. Jeff Johns and Scott Snyder and everybody else were there, Jim Lee. And they took over a very small bar, like down the block. I don't even remember exactly where it was. And had press people there. They had all the new 52 comic books and an open bar. And we just sat there for like 2 hours just so we could read through all the books. And it was nobody talking, everybody drinking. Every once in a while, somebody would be like, this one's good. You want to read this one? I'd be like, sure. And that was the most conversation we have. Awesome. So I might have gotten like a little tipsy there, but that's it. No, that's my story about drinking and comic books. There you go.
That sounds like a weird evening, if I may say.
Ultimate party, I think, frankly. Reading comic books, drinking, not having to talk to anybody, delightful.
In a public area, then taking the subway home, dream.
Times Square, love it. Nick Grayson says, what planet would you eat?
Oh, great call.
This is a trap. All right, is anybody going to fall into this trap?
Yes, this is a trap, and I was about to say it to avoid it, but you're right. You're right, Alex. We'll avoid the trap.
Let's not fall into that trap. Pete, what planet did you eat? They're not all a trap. There's one specific planet that's a trap.
There are a lot of other planets you could eat. Like, for instance, I feel like Mercury is sort of like a spicy, caliente, muy caliente planet. Yeah, and Jupiter's like too much.
Yeah, Mars is probably like a little juicy because it's so red.
I hope it would have a nougat center.
Oh, yeah, probably.
You know what, Pete? Put the nougat shit away.
No, man. Don't you fucking start hating on my love of nougat.
Your life is chasing nougat. Just get it.
There's nothing like nougat, dude.
Nougat is available.
Yeah, that's why you didn't like that John Carter movie, because you didn't find the nougat in the center of Mars.
Yeah.
John Carter, man, what a movie.
I came out of that movie and I was like, this is going to be some kid's candy bar.
This is the tastiest movie I've ever, a generation. Well, I guess Uranus.
Oh, French class.
All right, I love this trap.
We got last one from the Lamanana, which is a, I feel like this is a very private thing for Pete. Which is a better movie, The Incredibles or Shrek? Were you arguing about this earlier today, Pete?
Yes. Yes, we were. We've been arguing about this for days.
Wait, hold on. What side did you fall on? Because here's what I'm going to get. Well, let me guess.
I am so mad right now.
Okay, here's my guess. Pete just left. My guess is that Luana, just based on age, said Shrek, and you said The Incredibles. Is that right? Yeah. Luana's wrong.
Shrek is trash. Fuck
sucks.
Shrek, I say.
Sucks.
No, Shrek never sucks.
Say, hey.
Bad movie.
Hey,
bad girlfriend. Right now. Bad boyfriend. Bad life.
Stop what you're doing right now.
You're
please.
All bad people. Bad.
I have to go back, and you assholes are done here, so please.
Obviously, we're just kidding. Oh, Pete. Obviously, we're just kidding. But I would 1,000,000% Incredibles over.
Yeah.
I do this show on Wednesday nights called Characters Welcome. And one of the other hosts of that show is obsessed with Shrek. And we get in fights constantly about Shrek.
It's a terrible movie. It's disingenuous. It casts stars at the expense of actual voice actors. The animation is terrible.
Ooh.
The animation is also sparse. Like, this has bothered me since that movie came out, that it looked like it was badly rendered. It was characters wandering across bare backgrounds with no characters and no life to it whatsoever. The jokes are callous and dumb.
Yes.
The only thing good...
Donkey.
It's like nails on a chalkboard. The only thing that's good about it is the enduring Smash Mouth All-Star jokes. Like, that is That is the one thing that I enjoy out of Shrek.
Wow.
And not even the song, the jokes. That's it.
I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry, Luana, that you asked this question. And we're so...
It was of his time. It was callous. Luana says it was of his time. No, it was David Katzenberg trying to outsell Disney, and then, like everything else, crashing and burning an entire industry. There you go.
His name is Lord Farquaad. He's saying Fuckwad.
It's not even a funny joke. It's not good. It's weird. Terrible. All of those movies are terrible. All the Shrek movies are terrible. The Puss in Boots movie is terrible. Shrek 4D, the thing I saw at the zoo one time, bad.
Oh, you saw it at a zoo? That's fun.
Sure. Yeah, it's good stuff. Incredibles, great movie.
You know what I like to do at zoos? Go watch a movie.
I usually... Are there other places to see a movie? The zoo? The aquarium? Those are the places that I go. I can't wait until things really open up again so I can go see 4D movies.
Sorry, caged animals. I'm here to watch a big TV, which is what I do at home also.
Yeah.
Live your life.
Sorry, live animals.
Oh, boy. Well, I'm sorry your relationship is over, but so is this section, audience questions.
What a great question to ask after we've all definitely had a cocktail, at least tonight. Yeah.
And we are going to move on to our next section, which is trivia. And for that, we're going to turn it over to Pete LePage. And on this episode, once again, we
this
got
is
it open.
We get back to you.
Pete?
Okay, great. So this is the part we give back to you, the lovely audience. It's an opportunity to win $25 free in the form of a gift card to Midtown Comics Online, because if you had $25, you go get some comic books. All we need is a first hand up on either the two.
Yes, you didn't explain this part. So we have been putting out to book people for trivia this week.
Oh,
nobody did have hands up. Kevin has hands up, which I feel like is going to turn out very poorly for us.
That's
but a trap. It's a trap, like many things on the show.
It's a Uranus.
We are going to invite him into the stream.
Speaking of traps, real quick, shout out to Liwana's comment. Wow, Pete gets to sleep on the couch.
Now that's incredible. Kevin! Welcome.
How are you?
All right. And I'm just going to say right up front, I am donating the prize to Ben and Beer Cat.
Oh, that's nice.
In honor of their engagement. That's great.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. It's some, cool. That'll pay for the wedding.
Lovely frogs and stuff behind you there, Kev.
Oh, yeah. I brought another set of puppets if you guys wanted to. These are from Think Geek. So the characters, the Mario characters from the POTU. And then these are my frogs. And the T-Rex I forgot to mention last time with the Folkmanis puppets.
Let me ask you, what does that light switch go to? The ultimate puppet. Ooh. There it is.
All right, Pete, take it away.
All right, here we go. Today's trivia is on topical comic news and a small nod to the legend Biz Markie. Nobody beats the Biz. Rest in peace. Mm-hmm. Please listen to all three options before making your selection, Kev. Here we go. In the new series, Spider-Man Beyond, Spider-Man is teaming up with whom? Is it A, Ben Reilly, B, the Beyonder, or C, Nick Cannon? So it's either A, which is the only one that really makes sense, or it could be B.
I'm going to go with A.
Correct.
Woo.
All right, here we go. Question number two. Which character is coming back in Thor number 18 in October? Hint, cameo. There's a cameo in the Loki TV show. Is it A, Alligator Loki, B, Frog Thor, or C, Rosario Dawson? So it is either A, unfortunately, or it's B.
Hey, I'm a fan of Frog Thor and Alligator Loki, but I'm going to go with B on this one.
That is correct. I also agree with that statement. I'm hoping to get both of them, but right now we're only getting Frog Thor. Here we go. Last one. On August 10th, we're getting a new Batman comic called Blank. Is it A, I Am Batman, B, Batman Reptilian, or is it C, Tony Shalhoub? So it's either A, I'm Batman, or is it C, or I'm sorry, or B, Batman Reptilian. Don't pick B.
I'm going to go with, it's Men in Black 2.
Yes, you are correct.
And I'm gonna go with A.
A, yes, ooh, you are correct.
Woo.
$25 is yours to do with you what you wish, and it's nice of you to donate to love, Kev.
Congratulations,
that's
Kevin.
That's so nice.
Yes, thank you for coming on. I swear we will complete your quiz at some point, but just not today.
Part of our...
I figured.
Okay. It's part of our end of summer.
We're looking sharp, Kev. You're looking sharp.
You're looking great. All right, we'll talk to you soon.
Even in the middle of vacation time, you're still all business.
Yes. All right, Kevin, congratulations. You'll be getting $25 from Midtown Comics. Talk soon. Have a good night.
Good night.
All right.
Later.
There we go. Now, as we all know, comics are cool. What cool comics are you looking forward to, Pete?
Well, there is a compendium coming out called Lock and Key Keyhouse that I'm very excited for. I'm going to get that. Ooh. And also Usagi Yojimbo number 21.
Justin, what about you? What are you looking forward to?
Great question, Alex. I have to give it up to... Tough. I'm going to say Radiant Black number 6.
Oh, wow.
We've been covering this book a lot, and this sixth issue, I'm assuming based on just the cover, is going to really explore a new side of it that I really will enjoy. So
judging a lot by the cover.
I'm very interested by Superman and the Authority number 1 from DC Comics. Ooh, that's Grant Morrison coming back to Superman. Mikel Janin on art, who is always fantastic. It's already out in stores, so people have probably read it, or at least some people have probably read it. But that definitely was number 1 on my stack, so I'm excited to check that. Some of those are going to be in the Stack podcast coming out of the Comic Book Club feed. At Wednesday 9 a.m. Also, its own dedicated Stack feed. And folks, That is it for this week's show.
Oh, man.
A couple of people we want to thank. We want to thank Andre Darlington for coming on. Check out Gotham City Cocktails in stores now. Also, Brett Macris.
Brett Macris!
Thank you for coming on. And if you're ever in New Orleans, as mentioned, go by Cochon, where he's a chef de cuisine. Food is delicious there. Next week on the show, we're going to have two more great guests. Ira Marks, writer of Shark Summer, is going to be here. Also, Jeffrey Brown. He's going to be here to talk about his new book, yes. Total Waste of Space Time. So that should be a lot of fun. A couple of other podcasts that we can plug. Marvel Vision, our Marvel podcast, switching over to Fridays. We have a special episode that put a smile on Pete's face.
Alex gets his ass handed to him.
It'll be interesting to see how you're feeling by the end of tonight, Pete. I guess we'll see what happens. Riverdale After Dark, a Riverdale podcast. We just dropped a new episode with Denise Nadredre, the set decorator. Yes, and it was a lot of fun, so definitely check that out. Patreon.com/comicbookclub to support this show and all the shows we do. iTunes, Android, Spotify, Stitcher, or the app of your choice to subscribe, follow, and listen. At Comic Book Live on Twitter, Comic Book Club Live on Instagram, comicbookclublive.com for this podcast and many more. Until next time, good night.
Good night, guys.
In 1961, the Fantastic Four returned from space and the world changed forever.
Over the next year, the Earth experienced three alien attacks, the destruction of Lower Manhattan, and the reemergence of ancient gods.
Super Serious 616 is the podcast that covers it all from the inside.
What would it be like to live in that world?
Join Ed and Mike as they ask questions no one else is asking.
Is Iron Man a good use of shareholder capital?
Subscribe at Super Serious 616 or wherever you get your podcasts.